Special thanks to Clark Lee for joining us in that last segment. Vanderbilt football coach back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon here in our market. And of course, our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. We now don't switch gears. We're going to keep talking college football, but we bring in Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
Darren, I'm doing well. Hope you guys are okay.
Yeah, and I want to start with last night's game. Ole Miss cruises to a victory over Louisville without Lane Kiffin on the sidelines.
Hotty toddy.
And we had an interesting conversation with Nick Suss yesterday, who covers the team for the Clarion Ledger. And I asked him about the defense. And, you know, last year they were basically last or right at the very end with every team in every defensive category, right? Like, they're one of the worst defenses in the country last year. Nobody's saying can they go from last to first. But what if they're like in the middle of the pack? If they're in the 70s in defensive categories this season, rather than a team most would project to be 6-6, if their defense has massively improved, are they a team now that can win 8 or 9 games with a better defense?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, you're right. They were horrendous defensively. And one thing about Ole Miss is a team that plays so many snaps, it can be dangerous to look up their total defense. You got to look at yards per play because they're on the field for so many more time. They're on the field for so many more plays. And but they weren't good in any category last year. And it's hard to say. It's hard. You don't want to overreact. I know Louisville's not a great team, and they don't really threaten you down the field. And they've lost some skill players, but I don't care if you know, and there were some garbage points and garbage yards there, but they looked really good in the first 2.5, 3 quarters. That offense is really, really talented. If you can, there's just so many ways they can beat you. If you guys are watching, you could feel like Kirk Herbstreit's pain because he wanted to diagnose and tell us why Ole Miss was so good offensively and what they were doing, but they couldn't figure out how to get replays in because the Ole Miss plays at such a frenetic pace. I thought that was kind of funny there. So, yeah, I mean, the schedule is very difficult. We know life in the SEC West is difficult, but, you know, look what they did to Alabama last year. They're, you know, one of the few teams to move the ball consistently. So I think Matt Corral is fantastic. I followed their, you know, they've recruited very well at the running back position. They've got guys different sizes. They can do different things. So, Darren, I think Ole Miss is one of the more intriguing teams, not just in the league, but in the country.
Well, you're right about Kirk Herbstreit. He was definitely frustrated last night.
He kept referencing it over and over again. Yeah. Sorry, Darren. I think they made an adjustment at halftime as a crew, is like with the producer, and basically they just said, we're going to go right to a replay immediately, and then you pick it up. You don't need to say, let's look at that again, because I did notice, not like I was charting it, but I did notice they did show more replays in the third quarter than they did in the first half.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. Not a good first week of college football for the ACC. What, too early to tell, but what'd you make of the showing of the ACC or lack of for the first week of college football?
Yeah, I mean, obviously not great. I mean, Clemson, there's no shame in losing to Georgia, of course, but you don't want your marquee team to lose. You know, they had two marquee teams, Clemson and North Carolina. And while North Carolina lost to another ACC team, so you can argue it's not bad for the league, when you have a top 10 team, you probably, you know, if you're the commissioner, if you're Jim Phillips, you probably want North Carolina to win that game. Now, I think it's good for college football that Virginia Tech wins a big game like that. It was a fun game to watch. Florida State looks maybe a little bit they're definitely improved. They look better than maybe expected. You know, NC State with a nice win against probably a bad South Florida team, but very resounding. But then, you know, Georgia Tech loses at home to Northern Illinois. And this is not the Northern Illinois team of 5-10 years ago. They were one of the worst teams in the MAC in recent years. So that was a bad loss. Duke losing to Charlotte is a bad loss. You know, Louisville obviously didn't look great there. Miami, you know, I'm not going to ding Miami for losing that bad to Alabama, but they're not a great weekend for the ACC.
Yep, no doubt about it. What stood out to you in the SEC? Take that wherever you want, but what stood out to you? What got your attention? Is it the LSU loss to UCLA? Is it the Vanderbilt loss to ETSU? I mean, you take it however you want. It could be a good thing too. I don't know.
Yeah. Not too much was that, you know, obviously Vanderbilt losing was not a good sign for Vanderbilt, but it doesn't really affect the league because Vanderbilt, you know, was not expected to be, you know, relevant in the league this year. I think LSU losing is not a great, It's not great for the person that's not great for the most is Ed Orgeron, obviously. But if LSU goes on and threatens Alabama and Texas A&M, it's probably, you know, that people nationally will hold that against the SEC, just sort of like a few years ago when a mediocre Auburn team, well, not mediocre, but not a vintage Auburn team went out and beat Oregon early in the year. That people held that against Oregon. So conversely, you know, ideally for the SEC, it's probably great if LSU doesn't have a great year. You know, if they're third or fourth in the league by that. You know, I'm not, we're all overreacting to one game. Arkansas fumbled around against Rice a little bit, but really, you know, played well in the fourth quarter and covered the spread by, I think, 1 point. Mississippi State with an impressive rally. I watched a decent amount of that game, and then they were left. I left them for dead, and then I saw on Twitter they were coming back, so I watched the end of that game. That was almost like a college basketball game with the momentum swings in there. South Carolina, obviously, you know, Eastern Illinois is not a good team, but, you know, in Shane Beamer's debut, they took care of business with, you know, Zeb Noland, a sixth-year senior coach at quarterback. So, you know, I think we've got Kentucky, Missouri's huge, obviously, this week, but not a ton, you know, last week to really caught my attention. I guess Florida, maybe, potential quarterback situation there. You know, Anthony Richardson, the backup, I didn't see partly in that game, but, you know, was really good there, and Dan Mullen's trying to defuse the situation. So that's something to watch going forward.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. So, Mitch, as we look ahead, let's look at two teams that people probably don't watch play a whole lot around here, but that's the next opponent for Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Give us a couple of things that we need to know. Let's start with Pittsburgh.
Very good defensively, and you know, I'm not just saying that because, oh, it's Pat Narduzzi. He's a defensive coach, and, you know, watch out for them. They led the nation last year in a stat called havoc rate, which is basically interceptions, tackles for losses, sacks, forced fumbles. Basically, anytime you do something defensively that, like, wreaks havoc on the offense. 22.4% of their defensive snaps were a havoc play, which is outstanding if you think about it, almost one quarter. And then part of that is tackles for loss, like I said. They led the nation in tackles for loss, 111. So a very aggressive defense. You know, they went 5-5 last year in the ACC, lost two games by 1 point, one at BC in overtime, one at Miami. So it's a solid team. You know, this is an it's sort of like a program game for Tennessee. You find out where the program is. And, you know, this year, in year one of Josh Heupel, I'd say there's no shame in losing to Pitt at home. But big picture, this is a game Tennessee as a program shouldn't lose. You know, I'm kind of contradicting myself there. So I think it's a nice barometer game. It'd be a nice statement if they won. Kenny Pickett, their quarterback, is good, not great. He's one of those guys that burst onto the scene as a true freshman. I think he had a big game against Miami 4 years ago, and he's been okay, but, you know, he's just one of those guys who seems like he's been around forever, hasn't really gotten that much better. So I think the spread was, what, 2 when it came out. Pitt may be favored. Interesting barometer game for both programs. Hey, Pitt can go on the road and win in a hostile SEC environment. We just talked about the ACC not looking great. That would be a nice win for that league.
So with that in mind, let's now look at Vanderbilt's opponent in Colorado State. What's the matchup looking like there, knowing that Vanderbilt's got nowhere to go but up?
Yeah, well, neither does Colorado State. They lost in week one to South Dakota State, which is, you know, historically a very good FCS program, but they got beaten pretty badly. Very curious hire. You know, Steve Adazio was 2 years ago. Wasn't bad at Boston College. I think they might have gone like 7-6 for 4 or 5 years in a row, but it wasn't necessarily a hot commodity. You think of Adazio, he's at Florida, Temple. I think he's a Syracuse alum maybe. East Coast guy goes out there. You know, 1-3 last year in a shortened season, so hard to draw many conclusions from that. But we have some guys on our staff here who have access to a lot of historical records and, you know, basically results going back for decades. And I asked, is this the first time that two FBS teams, which lost to FCS teams in week one, are playing each other in week two? And my response was, ha, that would be a real pain to look up. Translation, I'm not looking that up. was the response I got there. So, you know, on paper, before the game, this was before the season, this was a game you probably said Vanderbilt has a really good chance of winning. You watched Vanderbilt the other day. You're probably not feeling that way. If you're a Colorado State fan, you're probably thinking the same thing. It's like, hey, my team lost at home to South Dakota State. I'm not too confident. So, you know, someone's going to win the game. And, I'm sure you guys just talked to Clark Lee. I'm, you know, just like you guys, interested to see what the response is in week two after such a poor performance in week one.
I don't know how much you got the chance to see it. I know you were watching a number of different games. But, Mitch, I'm just curious. I think you knew that the talent issue in terms of game breakers on both sides of the ball, that was going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. They don't have enough of those guys. They're not going to until they can recruit some more guys or find a few transfers, et cetera. But the execution, the scheme, that was what was just jumped out at to me. And you know, the level of lack of physical being able to just overwhelm ETSU, just alarming.
Yeah, well, especially since 2 years ago when the Vanderbilt team that really struggled. And I know ETSU is probably a lot better. They had a good spring season. They're better than they were 2 years ago. But Vanderbilt overwhelmed ETSU at the line of scrimmage 2 years ago. And, you know, I think they might have had 110 total yards of offense. So it was a far cry from that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was one of many concerns there, the physicality, the line of scrimmage. And you, like you said, Willie, this Vanderbilt team doesn't have a lot of game breakers. They've got some quality receivers who can catch the ball, but no one really to make that big play. In theory, you'd like to think that, okay, you don't have any game breakers at the SEC level, but they should be able to do it against an opponent like ETSU, but that wasn't the case there. So when you don't make big plays, you got to drive the ball down the field. And if you want to drive the ball down the field, you got to control the line of scrimmage. And Vanderbilt didn't do that either. So that was a recipe for, you know, not scoring a lot of points and mistakes. You know, had a lot of holding penalties, which is a result of, you know, getting beaten at the line of scrimmage. And then Tyler Steen, illegal man downfield on a touchdown. If you score that, maybe the game's a little bit different there. So, yeah, just lack of execution slash physicality at the line and then too many penalties, you know, obviously. Spelled trouble for Vanderbilt.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. And, you know, as you talked about the ACC and their struggles, one of those teams was Duke losing to Charlotte. And we got to know Will Healy quite a bit when he was here at Austin Peay. And I've watched what he did at Austin Peay, what he's now done at Charlotte. Is that a name that people need to pay attention to? Is it's probably going to be out there for some bigger jobs this year, most likely?
Sure. I mean, he was obviously, I think, Vanderbilt. I don't know how serious it got, but was a guy that he looked at. You know, I made the comment, I don't know if I tweeted out to a friend or texted someone, I said, you know, Will Healy could be coaching Duke next year. You know, we all think that David Cutcliffe obviously had a great career, but there was rumors he might retire this year. Clearly a guy who knows how to build a program and build a culture. After I said, I don't know how great of a fit he is at Duke, he takes a lot of transfers. Not that you can't take transfers at Duke or a quote-unquote academic school, but you're not going to take as many there. I don't think his... I've got no problem with his style. I don't think his style is a fit everywhere, the rah-rah type thing. You know, some of the more established programs might kind of look down on that. But there's no doubt the guy knows how to coach. And here's a thing. You know, he obviously did a great job rebuilding Austin Peay. You know what his record was in year one at Austin Peay?
Did not win a game.
Nope.
0-11. Yeah. So it tells you, there's very few very quick fixes in college football. And, you know, that's why the thing about Will Healy is when people were floating him out there for Vanderbilt or other jobs, some people would look at his overall record. I was like, well, you can't look at his overall record. That Austin Peay program when he took over was, horrible. And Vanderbilt played them twice when I was doing sideline duty. And, you know, I get down there and you can really see the quality of players. And Vanderbilt beat them badly twice. And I was shocked about, quite frankly, how bad those Austin Peay teams were. So Will Healy takes over a bad team, goes 0-11. When you haven't been a head coach for very long, it's hard to get on the right side of 500 when you start 0-11 there. So that's just kind of a big picture thing. When you're looking at coaching resumes, sometimes the overall record, you know, it might be hard to sell to a fan base. Oh, we hired a coach who's 500. Well, you got to dive in and really see what he did and where he started.
Oregon won. They're 1-0, but they had a tough time with Fresno. Fresno put up a fight. Now they go to the Shoe to take on Ohio State. Ohio State coming in as a 14.5-point favorite. What do you think of the Ducks right now as they go into Columbus to take on the Buckeyes?
Well, like about 99.7% of the world, I don't get the Pac-12 network. So I did not. I kept trying to flip over to that game when it was tight, and I couldn't find it. And as I go, yeah, it's on the Pac-12.
You mean with your high-tech abilities, Mitch, and your status at The Athletic, you can't find a way to get that done?
I'm just a common man, Willie, and who has DirecTV here.
Okay.
So just I get whatever I can.
Talk to your people. Talk to your superiors. Talk to Rex Road. Can Rex Road help you out with this? He knows people.
Rex Road and technology, sure. I'm sure those two go together. But I know this Oregon team, obviously the big news there was Kayvon Thibodeau, their All-American defensive end. It looks like he got hurt. Looks like he's going to play. Anthony Brown, the quarterback, is a sixth-year senior, started parts of three seasons at Boston College, a good player. I don't know if he's a national championship-level quarterback or a playoff-caliber quarterback. You know, I'm sure we all watch the Ohio State-Minnesota game. I just talked about making big plays and having explosive athletes. There's a team that has explosive athletes. I mean, that wide receiving core is absurd. Just look how good they are. They're number one. Alabama's number one wide receiver, or potential number one wide receiver, is a Ohio State castoff. So they can score in bunches. I'll be itching to see if Oregon can do anything defensively to kind of confuse C.J. Stroud. It's only his second career game. Thibodeau's healthy, and they can put some pressure on him and force him to make some mistakes. You know, he's not quite the runner that Justin Fields was. They'd like to keep him back more in the pocket there. So I think that's the recipe for Oregon. But Ohio State, too many weapons. The 14.5 seems, I don't know, seems high. I don't know if I'd pick Ohio State to cover, but I like the Buckeyes to win.
Going to be an interesting week two of college football after a fun week one. Mitch, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday. Light after Lee, I guess, is what we're calling it.
The light after Lee.
I like that. That's
okay.
Good.
Shedding light on the situation.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. Dad joke. We will come back, wrap up today's show. But first, Willie, you're going to tell us about loans once again.
Hey, you know, if you're living in our listening area, you know that your home value is way up. That's one of the benefits of living in our city. Home values are great right now. And so one of the options you have right now that Loan Pronto wants you to know about is that with mortgage rates at all-time lows, it's a great time to call Loan Pronto, refinance, and get cash out of your home's equity. You can use that cash if you need it right now for something. Maybe you want to do a home improvement project, reinvest in your home, make it even more valuable. Or if you want to consolidate some debt, you can do either of those things. You can get $40,000, $50,000 out if you call Loan Pronto now. Take advantage of the situation now before it changes with the mortgage rates. Call 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or go to loanpronto.com. Their all-digital platform makes it fast and easy. And if you act now, you can skip your next two house payments for a refi, or you can get that cash out to consolidate debt, get rid of PMI, or use it to make your home even more valuable with that home improvement project you've been dreaming about. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com, equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.